Next case for argument is Zhang v. Gonzalez. Ms. Raika.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Kevin Raika, and I represent the petitioner Langwei Zhang. At issue in this case is an adverse credibility finding by an immigration judge in a Chinese asylum case based on a family's violation of the one-child policy. As a first matter, there are a number of bases, which I believe there are four main bases, why the judge believed that the petitioner was not credible. I believe these are in error. First, the judge over-relies on the State Department report regarding human rights practices in China to determine what Chinese village officials in Fujian would or would not do. In page 7 of the judge's opinion, he relies on a report from 1998 detailing events in China in 1997 to discredit events that petitioner was testifying to happened in 1988.
And before you sort of go through that, can you put that in the context of, you know, why he is entitled to relief when the rule actually protects, you know, a spouse or the person to whom this law is applied? You know, you would want us to expand, I think, the law in this area to say that he can claim, because his parents violated the one-child policy, that should be broadened to include his claim, which to date it has not been.
Well, Judge Williams, we're not asking you to expand the law today. I believe that issue would be a matter of first impression for the board on remand. What we are asking the court to do today is to look at whether or not the immigration judge's adverse credibility finding was proper.
Why wasn't the father's asylum case consolidated with this?
I do not know why the case was not consolidated, Your Honor. I believe it was because, from what I can discern from the record, the father's case was filed in a separate city at a separate time. I do not know why these were not administratively consolidated. It does not appear that the counsel who represented petitioner in the proceedings before this court ever asked for those cases to be consolidated. There's nothing in the record to suggest that they were. Just to return to the immigration judge's adverse credibility finding, this court has repeatedly cautioned immigration judges against relying or over-relying on the State Department reports because of the potential bias contained in those reports and the inability of a petitioner to question the conclusions contained in the State Department reports themselves. The judge states that exceptions to the one-child policy are becoming the norm, but once again, this is based on the 1998 report and does not focus on the events during the time petitioners testifying these events happened.
Well, what is it that your client anticipates if he's sent back to China?
According to Mr. Zhang's testimony, he believes that he would either be imprisoned to locate his family for their violation of the one-child policy, that he would put his family in danger by his presence there, that he may be tortured by the Chinese authorities. He's posited a number of potential harms that could result if he returns to China because of his family's violation and then their subsequent hiding from the authorities once this violation occurred.
Well, is there any evidence about what happens to these, you know, extra kids, so to speak, in China?
There is evidence in the record, Your Honors, based on state reports, news articles, other evidence that was submitted to the board and to the immigration judge, indicating that family members are often imprisoned, including extended family members, which would include grandparents and sometimes siblings, and that families are often punished for a mother or father's violation of the one-child policy. The immigration judge questions how the authorities would know that the petitioner's mother was pregnant in April 1988 when petitioner stated that his mother had become pregnant only in February or March. This is similar to Gay v. Ashcroft, a Ninth Circuit case where the judge inserted his own personal conjectures about what a Chinese authorities would do or know. Similarly, in Dong v. Ashcroft, this court found that Chinese authorities were aware of a woman's pregnancy only 1 month after it occurred, based on possibly a person at the hospital reporting the results of the pregnancy test to Chinese authorities. This pregnancy occurred in the same province, Fujian, as the pregnancy in this case occurred. Next, the immigration judge turns to the affidavits of the mother and the aunt and finds that because they reference events in 1989, not 1988, that this discredits the petitioner's testimony. This is a difference in the testimony, but the mother and the aunt also state in their affidavits that the same persecutory events happened as petitioner testified to.
Seems very odd there'd be no evidence from the father since he's in the United States.
I can't explain the reasons why the father did not provide testimony, either written or via testimony in front of the court. That is not clear from the record. It appears that petitioner counsel may have tried to contact the father, but it is not clear why the father did not appear. Petitioner submits that the lack of the father's testimony does not destroy the petitioner's claim. Specifically, there's another troubling reference by the judge as well. In a footnote, his first footnote of the opinion on page 10, the judge indicates that if the father was here working and making money, he would have sent the money back to China so that the fine that was assessed against the family could be paid. But this isn't necessarily so. Sending money back could alert the Chinese authorities that the father had fled China, could alert them to the presence of the mother, and also it is not reasonable to ask that they pay this fine if the nature of the fine is persecutory.
I don't see where in your brief you discuss any evidence as to what China does to the children born in violation of this, their one-child policy.
If my recollection is correct, I do not believe that is addressed directly in the brief, but there is evidence in the record regarding Chinese treatment of families, of extended families of mothers and fathers who are deemed to have violated the one-child policy in China. What we are asking this court to do today is to reverse the adverse credibility finding based on the immigration judge's over-reliance on the State Department report, his own personal conjecture as to what Chinese authorities would know or do, rather than his summary based on evidence in the record or his summary of testimony, his questioning of the authorities' knowledge, particularly in light of Dong v. Ashcroft, which addressed a pregnancy in the same region as occurred in this case, his discrediting of testimony based on affidavits of the mother and the aunt, which were very short in detail, not provide a basis to discredit the testimony. Also, the immigration judge relied on the airport interview that was conducted when petitioner came into the United States. Petitioner repeatedly stated that the reason the airport interview apparently contradicted his testimony was because he had been advised to answer in certain ways by the snakehead who had helped him to enter the United States.
I don't see why the immigration judge has to believe that.
Well, the immigration judge does not have to believe it, but it is a reasonable expectation.
Why would the snakeheads give that advice? I don't get that. What's the sense of that?
Well, Your Honor, I think what we need to take into account is that at the time the petitioner was only 16 or 17, and he testified in his direct testimony to the immigration judge repeatedly that he had been advised to answer a certain way to gain entry.
A situation in which the immigration judges are required to believe everything that an asylum applicant says, because then there'd be automatic asylum for everybody, right? They have to make some judgments of believability.
Judge Posner, that's correct, but I would posit that the petitioner's explanation for why he did not...
It doesn't make any sense. Why would the snakehead say that? Why wouldn't they say, look, if you want to stay in the United States after you get there, say you're a victim of persecution?
I can't say why a snakehead would advise him a certain way and not to say that he was
right.
A victim of the one-child policy.
Why does the immigration judge have to believe... Because, it seems perfectly sensible for the immigration judges to rely on what these people say to the asylum officers when they first arrive. And now you're saying, well, no, the immigration judge can't put any weight on such discrepancies, right? Because the petitioner just has to testify, oh, you know, I was misinformed.
Well, I'm not saying that...
He was told to lie, you know.
Judge Posner, I'm not saying that the immigration judge cannot put any weight on that. Of course, the immigration judge...
Well, that's what he did. He thought, you know, that he was not impressed by the suggestion that the reason that the petitioner lied to the asylum officer was that it was on advice of snakeheads, right? You don't have to believe that.
Well, I contend that it was a reasonable explanation, but the judge, of course, disagreed. I see my time is up, Your Honor.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Rake. Mr. Jones?
Good morning. May it please the Court. I'm Bill Jones, and I represent the Attorney General in this matter. Petitioner's inconsistencies about why he came to the United States, his unbelievable testimony about alleged incidents, and his mother's and aunt's affidavits that actually undercut his claim support the immigration judge's finding that petitioner was not credible and failed to meet his burden of proof here.
But why wasn't the father's case consolidated?
Your Honor, the record is silent on that point. The immigration judge did, and the government as well, did question the petitioner on the status of his father's case. According to petitioner's testimony, the case was pending but had not been resolved at that point. Towards the end of the hearing, the immigration judge went so far as to almost suggest that if there was movement in the father's case while the petitioner's appeal was pending before the board, that he file a motion to reopen or for remand to incorporate evidence from the father's case in his case that could help his claim potentially. The record is silent as to that ever happening here, however. The adverse credibility finding here that the immigration judge made was based on specific and cogent reasons that are found in the record. The first basis of this finding is the inconsistent stories that petitioner told of why he came to the United States. He told one story in the airport interviews in which in two separate interviews in front of two separate INS officers, he stated that his reasons for coming to the United States was that his family was poor and that he could not get a job in China and that he wanted to seek employment in the United States. Contrast that, obviously, with the story that he tells in his asylum application and in the hearing testimony. The immigration judge properly found that as an inconsistency that undermined petitioner's credibility. And significantly also, I would add, in the airport interviews, the petitioner never mentioned the one-child policy. He never mentioned that he was fleeing because his family had an overbirth, if you will. He mentioned none of those factors at all as his reason for leaving China and wanting to come to the United States.
Well, is one of the alternatives we have, because I understand your position is that we would deny the petition, that we could rule that he's statutorily ineligible for asylum, even though the IJ didn't base his decision on it because of the fact that he's a child trying to make this claim?
Your Honor, I think it is accurate to say that that there is no case law on the notion of whether a child can step into the shoes of his parents in claiming persecution under a coercive birth control policy. And I'm certainly not a policymaker for the Attorney General on that point. But I would just suggest to the court that if it were the case that a child could step into those shoes, that the petitioner would not be the candidate here because he's actually the firstborn. He's not the overbirth child. And so to the extent it is possible for a child to step in those shoes, I would suggest that petitioner would not be the one in this instance. The second basis for the adverse credibility ruling was what the immigration judge found as the unbelievable testimony about alleged incidents of persecution. As once again, the immigration judge outlined specific reasons on the record for finding the petitioner's testimony unbelievable. specifically, he noted that the petitioner at the time of these incidents was only 6 years old. He noted that the petitioner was not home for two of the three alleged incidents. And also he did note that the record was vague and unclear on how exactly the authorities knew so quickly about the pregnancy of petitioner's mother. And this is particularly relevant in light of the affidavits from petitioner's mother and aunt, which suggest a timeline separate from the one that petitioner's testimony and application suggest. Overall, Your Honors, I would suggest that...
Counsel, let me just ask you a question that I'd like to be informed on. He was interviewed twice on entry to the U.S., or at least on this flight?
That's correct.
Why was he interviewed twice?
He was once interviewed under the alias that he attempted to use with the falsified documents.
And under his real name.
And then secondly, under his real name. That's correct. The immigration judge's reasons for finding the petitioner not credible here cut to the very heart of his claim for asylum. The reasons he left his home country, the reasons he came to the United States, whether he feared returning to his home country, and also these incidents, these alleged incidents that supposedly marked the beginning of his family's persecution in China. And in addition, the petitioner failed to offer either a convincing explanation of the discrepancies or a credible and extrinsic corroborating evidence. In fact, here his attempt at offering corroborating evidence turned out to severely undercut his claim in the form of his mother's affidavit and his aunt's affidavit. Specifically, as I mentioned, on the issue of whether any alleged pressure from authorities began before the birth of petitioner's sister or after petitioner's sister was born. What petitioner would paint as a minor discrepancy here actually cuts to the heart of his claim. His claim is that local authorities attempted to pressure his family into ending the pregnancy. The affidavits of the mother and aunt, however, suggest a timeline of any pressure, if at all, took place once his sister was born. So not a minor discrepancy, but a major difference between the affidavits and petitioner's timeline. In addition, Your Honors, the affidavit from petitioner's aunt suggests that petitioner was coming to the United States in seeking patronage and education, which, of course, undercuts his asylum application claim and his hearing testimony, but seems to support his initial airport interviews. The record as a whole, Your Honors, supports the immigration judge's findings and is not one such that it would compel a finding in petitioner's favor.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Jones.
You.
Mr. Reka, do you have anything further? Your time expired. We'll give you a minute if you want.
No.
Okay. Well, thank you very much to both counsel. Last case for